welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes.
So this is a holiday, and we probably are, you're probably are tempted to watch football on a day like today. But
right?
we are beginning another new year, and there is uncertainty in the year. Today, we do not have live mics. You want to talk to us during the week, you can at 800-317-9119. But today, we're going to give you some background, how we got into the business, why our practice works the way it does, why it is different. What are the concerns that we've seen people address? This, we hope, will be very educational and informative and give you a higher level of confidence about listening to us and what we say in the course of our normal shows. So we wish you a happy new year. Perry, let's talk about how we transitioned into this business. Because this, where we are is kind of unique still, even though there's a lot of people who are referred to as financial advisors, the majority of them are still kind of operating with their feet in two different camps.
They try to have it both ways. They want to be, that commission broker that's making sales to people all the time. But they want to be seen as an advisor because that's a more trusted position to be in. But you really can't do it both ways. You have to make a choice. You have to be one or the other. And we both began in the broker-dealer world. We both began working as registered reps in a broker-dealer. And that is far, far different from what we do today.
Well, at the time I first got licensed, I was still in college working for an insurance company. And they decided that we should have a securities license. So I'm embarrassed to say that it was a 3-hour crash course and a 3-hour test, and I was licensed to do anything I wanted.
You were fully qualified at that point. That's right. You're good to go.
That's right. And basically being licensed just means you're supposed to know what's going to get you in deep trouble.
Right.
Not what you actually need to do to manage.
More importantly,
money.
What's going to get the firm in deep trouble? That's what they were trying to avoid. Yeah.
That's true.
They probably didn't care what happened to you.
True.
Just save the firm. That was the key.
In fact, that's one of the important issues in terms of today's business model and the way financial models or portfolio construction occurs, is the primary objective is how are we going to defend ourselves if a client sues us?
Absolutely.
That's the basis for portfolio construction. It's not how the client makes money. It's what do we do if they get mad and sue us? But I'm ahead of myself. We're going to come back and talk about that. Before we went on our recording here, I was talking with you about one of my key moments in the industry. So a former partner and I had a registered investment advisor, but we were primarily brokers. That's what we did. We were selling load mutual funds, which today would be a swear word.
Right.
But they had 8.5% commissions, and you made money doing that. So that and partnerships and tax shelters and stuff, I kind of date myself. But in 1987, the market had come out of a period of consolidation. And one of the mutual funds that had cover of a magazine was the Fidelity Magellan Fund and Peter Lynch. So, but in the summer of 87, I'm sitting there with clients saying, you know, this is really getting pretty risky and we should be in bonds because they're cheap. They're undervalued at this point in time. And I have to convince people to quit putting money into Magellan to buy a bond fund. And then they'd come back in and say, but I'm losing money. You know, Magellan's still going up. And I said, you know, that's where risk is, and this is where value is. You should keep doing this. You'll be okay. They come back in and say, I'm done with that. I am absolutely done with that. I do not want to buy bonds anymore. I want to be back in Magellan Fund. And so I'd say, okay, you know, I'll quit fighting with you. We'll do what you want to do. And that's the way most advisors still actually work. The client tells the advisor what they're supposed to do. Now, it's in a little bit of a, I don't want to use the word charade, but it's kind of covered up in a way that you don't realize you, the investor, are telling your advisor how to structure your portfolio.
And that is really important. That's such an important point, that the client in that relationship is in charge of what's going on, which is, we always, that begs the question, why is the advisor getting paid, right? And what are they getting paid for if the client's making all the decisions? But in that broker-dealer model, that's how it works. They're going to ask you what you want. They may tell you, this is what we think you should do, but if you want to do something else, well, by golly, whatever you'll pay for is where you're going to end up. And that's why that's not an advisory job. That's why it's a sales job. And it's important to recognize the difference there.
Well, and that's exactly where I was in 87.
Yeah.
Clients are saying, I don't want to do that anymore. I don't care. You know, I want to do this. And so we do this. And so what happened in 87? The Fidelity Magellan Fund from early January until early September was up 52%.
Not bad.
Well, who doesn't want that? And you're thinking, I don't have a lot of money, but if I had 52% return, I'd have a whole lot more.
Right.
And you want me in bonds and I'm losing money. I mean, what gives? Well, what happened in October of 87?
I remember there was a little dust up in the market in October of 87.
It was Black Monday. I think it was October 13th. And it just shook up the markets. I mean, we didn't have the internet. We just, you had to turn on the TV or the radio to find out what was going on.
Sure.
Because the market was collapsing. And so was Fidelity Magellan. Well, over the next 3 months, the market finally bottomed out on December 3rd, and it was down 30%. And the emotional response, including mine, I'm thinking, I don't know how much more of this I can take. And of course, what's happening along the way is the people who insisted on getting out of bonds, which were rising at that point in time, came in and said, you dirty so-and-so, you should have known better. You shouldn't have let me do that.
How dare you?
Yeah. And at that time, I was in a national study group, and we met I think it was in February of 88. We met down in Atlanta, and the guys I'm with, we're all brokers. And most of them are making a ton of money, a lot more than I was in Port Orchard. And I said, you know, I'm going to go back to my original training in the business, which was to manage money on a timing basis on a fee contract. And they looked at me and they said, are you crazy?
Makes no sense. Yeah, you can't do that. It makes no sense.
We're getting paid 8%. For every transaction we do, and you're talking about doing, at that time, it was 2% a year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how are you going to survive in a business like that? I said, well, basically, that was my real training in the business. My first mentor had me doing point and figure charts, and I, between doing that stuff on record keeping, I was also a salesman, but I was selling market timing on no-load mutual funds, which back in the 70s.
Were there six of those then?
Yeah, I think there were seven. You're
seven?
Right. You're
okay,
pretty close.
There we go.
It was, interestingly enough, Vanguard, which used to be an 8%, 8.5% load fund, was the first one to go to all no-load funds. And the market said, nobody's ever going to buy those.
Who's going to do that? They're going to want to go see a broker and buy a fund. And
It wasn't much later, Charles Schwab left Merrill Lynch to create the Charles Schwab and Company as a discount broker. I think that was 73 or 4. And he got the same kind of pushback.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Who on earth is ever going to use a brokerage firm that doesn't give them recommendations?
The message to him was, this will never work. You cannot survive. There's no chance this is ever going to go. Didn't turn out that way.
So as the marketplace developed, one, we saw things change. And in fact, in 88, I made the announcement to my study group that I was going to make this change. And in 1990, I left the brokerage business. I made a decision. I was never going to operate on a commission basis again.
Mm-hmm.
I, if If I was going to be held accountable, it was for the work I did helping clients manage these market issues rather than selling them something and pray it all worked out okay. And if it didn't, it wasn't my fault because, you know, it was just a sales deal. So that was a major shift. In fact, when my first partner told me, he says, you won't survive 6 months in a business right. model like that.
So, correct. It can't work. I remember when I was working for a Cattaray Grant broker dealer, and the first time I explained to my supervisor what it is I was trying to do, which was exactly what you were already doing, Don. We were already on the same page. Didn't even know each other at that time, but you know, selling no load funds on a fee basis, and she told me you should probably rethink that. I'm pretty sure that's illegal. I don't think you can do that. You know, I don't think that's true. You know, I think this is perfectly legal, but that's how foreign that concept was at that time.
Well, in the brokerage business, pushback, and it's only been in the last decade or so that they finally said, well, you know, those guys, in fact, a lot of big producers in the brokerage business finally recognized they had a material conflict of interest and that they'd serve their clients better if they registered as investment advisors and left their brokerage firms.
Right.
And they got sued by the brokerage firms. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Those are our clients. You don't know who they are. They are our clients. But they left anyway. And finally, they threw in the towel and said, suing these guys isn't getting us anywhere. But since the fiduciary is important to them and apparently to clients, the industry is saying, we need to look more like they do. So instead of having brokers, they tried a couple of different names and ended up with, we're financial advisors.
Financial advisors, and, there you go.
And we can be fiduciaries too. We just put on a different hat in front of you. Problem is people never see the hat change. So that remains a significant problem as we talk to people who call us. In fact, if you want to call us during the week and talk about your situation, the office number is 800-317-9119. But clients, prospects talking to a new advisor never are really clear about how they are going to pay that advisor for the help.
And right.
You know, money's always sensitive, whether you're talking to your spouse, your kids, or the financial advisor. Just exactly what's in this for you is not a conversation that people like to bring up. It's a touchy subject.
But it's very important to know how your advisor is being compensated. That'll let you know if they're a salesperson or if they're an advisor. If they're getting paid, you know, per transaction, they're a salesperson. And it's important that you know that going in ahead of time. It gives you a heads up as to what their goal is there, which is to sell you something.
Well, I know one of the recent phone interviews I've had and looking at statements that they sent over, about a third of the assets that he thought were from his advisory relationship were commission transactions.
Yeah, there you go.
They're lumped in on the statement, so it was hard to identify
them. It looks the same, but it's not the same, right?
That's correct. And so it changes the amount of trust you should have because there is a conflict of interest, and it is material when it comes to how the portfolio is going to be structured and what's going to happen going forward.
Absolutely. There we are up against our first break of the morning here. I'd like to remind you that you are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. If you'd like to sign up for our upcoming market update, go to irradio.com. That is irradio.com. Head to the webinar page, give that registration link a click, and you're going to get an email back, and you'll be good to go on for our next update. And we'll have plenty of time for your questions. It's a great thing. It's worth your time. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
For many investors, the stock market is like a game. I'm Don Creech. Along with Perry Sykes, we host Investor Resources every Saturday afternoon at 3. Damage to the global economy from the virus is still creating serious problems in traditional areas of safety. Inflation, rising interest rates, and the supply chain are challenging corporate profits and stock prices. Groceries and gasoline are more expensive, crimping consumer spending, the lifeblood of our economy and the stock market. As the economy slows, portfolio risk increase. A balanced portfolio is not a plan to protect capital. Rebalancing isn't a plan to protect capital. Buy and hold isn't a plan to protect capital. After you have losses, it's too late to do anything meaningful about it. Being right in the market is not about how to make money. It's about risk management. Never, never abandon risk management. Stay up to date. Register for our next stock market update at IRIRadio.com. That's IRIRadio.com.
Far, we've been traveling far. Without a home, but not without a star. It seems so far away. We're traveling light today.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Investor Resources. It's Perry Sykes and Don Creech.
Man, this is Don over here on this side of the water. Anyway, when we were in the last segment, we were talking about how we got started in the business, because we both started in the brokerage business, and
right.
You were licensed for insurance too, weren't you?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was too. So we sold insurance. We sold annuities. I was also a real estate broker. I did investment properties. I mean, if there was a way to make money, we wanted our hands in it.
Right. Because there was a sale to make and to be able to wait and going to make that sale. So
that's right.
Yeah.
And as we explained in the last segment, we both figured out that that end of the business had material conflicts of interest. There's no way around them except to get out of that end of the business. I mean, I gave up my real estate license, and I didn't give up my insurance license right away after I became my own independently owned registered investment advisor, which is the firm we operate in today. Mm-hmm. So we joined firms back in 07.
Correct.
But the transition that happened from brokerage, you got to figure out how to think differently, because you're not selling something. You're actually taking management responsibility. That's a different frame of mind. You look at the market differently when you're not just trying to get somebody to part money, empty their checkbook.
Right. Right. Yeah. When you actually need them to do better, that's when the mind shift happens. And that's what you don't get with most broker dealers. They're in there for the sale. They're trying to sell you something. And whether it actually works out best for you long term, not really part of the thought process. And that's what you need. That's what you really should be looking for.
So one of the things that happened in the late 80s and early 90s was the development of software on portfolio construction. And there, everybody was trying to dominate the market. It's just like any other piece of technology. One company starts it, somebody else says, I've got a better idea. And then all of a sudden you have more than a handful of choices. And I went through a lot of different software programs. I ended up with one that I used for well over a decade until I finally figured out that it didn't matter what I did inside that software, it didn't correlate with what was actually happening in the market. It built a model, but the model was theory and reality was disconnected. And that's where the industry still stands today with what is referred to as modern portfolio theory, based on 1952 and Harry Markowitz's famous paper, for which he eventually got a Nobel Prize.
Right.
However, Dr. Markowitz has repeatedly said, I would never use that to manage my own money, and the industry doesn't use it properly, But it's too late to do anything about it because it's ingrained in the process.
It just steamrolled straight into the marketing side of Wall Street, and it's become embedded there. And you know, you should keep in mind that, you know, Harry Markowitz wrote that paper in 1952, and the data that builds your portfolio also comes from 1952 and even before that. It's just old data that has no relationship to what's going on now, but that's where the model gets built from. And if, like you said, Don, when you build a few of those over a few years, you begin to notice, hey, wait a minute, there's not really anything I can do to change things here, because this is all built on long-term historic data, and it doesn't matter what's going on today. And we think that's a really fundamental flaw.
So when everybody's been through some sort of math class, whether it's in high school or college or post-grad work, and you know what a bell curve looks like. Mm-hmm. And so that's the fundamental process of taking a look at historic market returns. Say, well, if we spread them out on a spreadsheet, I mean, you get this bell curve, and most of the time you're going to end up here in the center. And so you should feel okay about that, right? Well, you say, yeah, who's going to argue with the math of a bell curve? I mean, I'd look really stupid if I was challenging my financial advisor's assumptions. But Dr. Mandelbrot, who is, he's now deceased, but he was publishing papers at the same time that Dr. Markowitz was, except he was publishing them saying, Markowitz is wrong, Markowitz is wrong, Markowitz is wrong. And nobody wanted to listen to him. Eventually, this book was written, The Misbehavior of Markets, and I've recommended it to people who call in on the radio show, who are clients, who are prospects, and said, you really want to understand what you've been told. Misbehavior of Markets is a book that is not hard to read, but it will be eye-opening.
It's a good read. Yeah, it's well worth your time to read that book.
So coming right out of there, one of the problems with the bell curve is that it doesn't fit stock market data very well. From 1916 to 2003, the daily index of the Dow Jones do not spread out nicely on graph paper, like a simple bell curve. That's statistically, that's the theory. But again, reality, the abnormalities on the high side are way off the chart. And the abnormal, and nobody cares about those because I'm making a ton of money.
Right. That's the good news.
The abnormalities on the downside, oh man, I do not want to go there. And they're off the chart too. They don't show up on the bell curve unless you have a really, really wide piece of paper. I mean, you get out a piece of butcher paper and unroll it across the dining room table, extended for guests. And now you can plot the bell curve because it is abnormal when it comes to market returns. People don't like drawdown. And when you look at that, the theory says that over time, there should be 58 days when the Dow moves more than about 3.5%. Okay, that's 58 days. That's the theory. That's how portfolios are structured. But in reality, it's 1,001 times in the same time period.
So it's not even close. It's not even close to representing what happens. And that's why they have to average everything out. That average smooths out that data, but it doesn't smooth out reality. So you're going to still get those huge up days and those enormous down days that give you that level of volatility that if you look at that cute little chart on the back of their wall, the mountain chart of the historic returns of the market, it's not there. It's just a slow, steady climb, it looks like, over a 100-year period. And it's just not true. It doesn't happen that way. If you're looking at individual data year by year, wild things happen, and there's no way to predict what's going to happen. But I guarantee you, it's not going to be that smooth average run. That just doesn't exist.
Well, the same theory, Markowitz theory, modern portfolio theory, suggests that there will be 6 days of moves beyond 4.5% between 16 and 2003. It's our data period. Mm-hmm. Well, 6 days, but in actually, there were 366 days in the time period. Again, the theory doesn't match reality. Now, drawdown of more than 7% is not a big drawdown. 10% is pretty normal fluctuation in the market. But once you get to 7% and it keeps dropping, clients, investors start getting the stomach churning and they're losing sleep and they do not want that to happen.
That'll flat get their attention. That's right.
But you look at that pretty chart, balancing assets, diversifying them through asset classes. Yeah, you have a little real estate, you have a little small cap, some, we'll put some foreign stocks and some emerging markets because that's really the future growth of the global economy. We'll have some large and small cap stocks and growth and some value. We're going to asset allocate you and diversify you to manage risk because we want to protect capital, right? So a swing of more than 7% in that pretty bell chart, pie chart model only occurs, you can sleep well with this, once every 300 years.
doesn't seem like that's something that you would put your faith in, but that's because that presentation is never made at the broker dealer's office. When you're sitting down with your stockbroker, they never talk about that with that pie chart. You're never going to hear how wildly you're going to be out of step with the market. You just talk about, well, if you stay with this long enough, like longer than you're going to be alive, everything will work out. And that's the problem. That's why we don't use it any longer, because no one has that kind of time. No one has that time frame of unlimited time. And that's essentially what you need if you're going to be sure that's going to work out in your favor.
Well, that's certainly true. And so this once in 300 year event that's in right. your model actually occurred 48 times in the data period. Well, that's a whole lot different. Now, let's go back to the bear market of 07, 8, and 9. I say 07 because that's where it topped.
That's where it began,
think of 8 and 9 because that was the calamitous part of it. And that was a S&P drawdown of, I think, 52, 54%. And that time period was when Janet Yellen was Secretary of the Treasury. No, she was Chairman of the Fed. She's Secretary
correct.
Of the Treasury now.
Right.
And a couple of years later, we're in 18 and 19, and she's testifying in Congress. Now, bear markets like 08, 09, they're fairly significant. People remember those. In fact, most of you listening still do.
It's a big move, you bet.
Yeah, that's right. So in her testimony, talking about the fourth quarter drawdown in 18, she tells Congress, we have things under control. You do not need to worry. We will not have another bear market like 08 and 9 in 500 years. And I said, you got to be kidding me. She has drunk the Kool-Aid. She's emptied the glass.
And on the academia side, that's true. If you're just looking at it academically, that's what the statistics say. But as you've been pointing out, Don, reality is far different from that theory.
So somewhere along the line, well, we were drinking the Kool-Aid too.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's what all the continuing education is about.
You bet.
It is, well, diversify across asset classes, have broadly diversified portfolios. Of course, we now quote Warren Buffett saying broad diversification is for people who don't understand what they're doing, which we now know includes most financial advisors because they just drink the Kool-Aid and tell people, well, this is what you do and this will take care of it.
Right.
Now and it doesn't work that way. You have to have some discipline, some processes, some stop losses to protect capital. And modern portfolio theory doesn't have any, well, it has discipline. It just doesn't have stop losses and it has no process to protect capital in down markets.
Right.
And that has to be a primary objective. Preserve your wealth or you won't have any.
That's absolutely a fact, Don. Preserve your wealth or you won't have any. That's the way it must go. We're at the bottom of the hour. Time to get out of here for a quick break. If you're not getting our Week in Review, which is our weekly email newsletter, send us an email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line and put your name in the body of the email, and you'll begin receiving that next week. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Warren Buffett's rule one is don't lose money. Rule two is remember rule one. I'm Don Creech. Along with Perry Sykes, we host Investor Resources every Saturday afternoon at 3. No professional or successful investor ever bought and held for the long term without regard or respect for the risk undertaken. Groceries and gasoline are more expensive, crimping consumer spending, the lifeblood of our economy and the stock market. As the economy slows, portfolio risk increases. A balanced portfolio is not a plan to protect capital. Rebalancing isn't a plan to protect capital. Buy and hold isn't a plan to protect capital. After you have losses, it's too late to do anything meaningful about it. Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@irradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. Be sure to register for our next stock market update at irradio.com. That's irradio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Investor Resources Show. This is Perry Sykes, and we're here with Don Creech.
So when we went to the break on this last one, we were talking about what happened with the modern portfolio theory and all the problems in it, and that there's a big disconnect between the theory and what actually happens in the market. But we, in the business, certified financial planners and accredited investment fiduciaries, all of the training is based on modern portfolio theory. So that's what we're doing. That's industry best practices.
And Don, you are correct. I mean, it's all of it. Everything is focused there. It's amazing that it's so focused and so directed. That's all you ever hear. It's just a constant drumbeat.
In fact, when you do your continuing education, you have to get those answers right.
Correct. Still. That's right.
That's part of it. The fact that it doesn't work is irrelevant.
Never mind. Yeah.
That's the way it has to happen. So there we were in our office in March of 2009 with the S&P having come down 50 to 54%. And we had been using Wall Street, the professionals at Wall Street, to build client portfolios. And after having interrogated them before we used them for clients, it's how are you going to protect us in a bear market? I mean, tech bubble was disastrous. So what the next one can't be too far away. What are you going to do? And you've heard this before. If you've talked to anybody from Wall Street, you have a financial advisor and who has an interview with one of the money managers on Wall Street. Well, we have analysts all around the world. We're researching India. We're researching Malaysia. We're researching China. We know what's going on. And besides which, we have this battery of PhDs and CMTs and CFAs. And there's no way you little guy sitting here in Seattle, Washington, are going to be able to compete with our research. So you hire us. Besides which, our company's been around for an eon of times, and we've seen bear markets and we know how to deal with them, which it turns out is close your eyes and wait it out.
Just hold on and do nothing. And you know, for all of the assurances we were looking for that we were going to get someone to protect our clients' capital, the only thing we got was the time-tested, well, just trust us. Just trust us. We know what to do. You know, pat us on the head and hope we're going to walk away. You know, we'll take care of this. We've seen this all before and we know what to do. Not true. Not true at all.
So in March of 2009, Perry and I, and we had another CFP who was working with us, and he was our planner. He was writing our plans. And we're looking at the market and the data and saying, you know, we are stuck here because half of the advisors, the professional firms, are saying this is the bottom. And the other half are saying, no, we're only halfway down. And we were just saying, and we don't have a data feed that tells us what it is that's likely. And that began the search to understand why modern portfolio theory fails in down markets.
Right.
It does in an up market, it'll work. I mean, it could work better, but it will work in an up market. It's in down markets where you must protect capital.
And
that,
you know,
it falls apart.
Yeah, the advisors that we had working for us at the time managing our portfolios really were the best of the best. We had the institutional managers. You know, we used to tell people if you walked into Goldman Sachs with $1 million, you couldn't get the managers we are going to set you up with, because we had institutional managers, the really big money guys, and they were going to protect money for us. Absolutely not true. That was their story too. That was their story. You know, we're here to make sure this works long term for everybody. They do nothing in a down market to protect capital.
So we started the search, and in that search, that's where I ran across the Misbehavior of Markets by Benoit Mandelbrot, and that was an eye opener for us. And then we attended some seminars, workshops, if you will, called No More Pies, the pie being the pie chart of modern portfolio theory.
Right.
What do you do for real risk management? And with that, we got involved in point and figure charts. Point and figure charts work, but they require that you tolerate fairly significant drawdowns, which, particularly if you're close to retirement, they aren't very comfortable. That doesn't work well. You need something that's got a little more responsiveness to the market. So continuing through a variety of programs, study stuff, classes, courses, and more seminars, we now use TC2000 charting software and have continued to expand our understanding of how those markets work, or how that data set works to respond to current markets.
And that's the clue. That's the important part for us. The what's going on in the market today, and you can't get that information anywhere else but to look at market data. And you have to ignore things like most of the fundamental data. It really doesn't matter how well a company's positioned, what their balance sheet looks like. Is anybody buying their stuff? And more importantly, is anybody buying their stock? That's all that really matters. And that doesn't always show up. But in technical analysis, you're looking at, hey, where's the pricing going here? Where's the momentum? You know, are we attracting money here, or are people leaving? That's the important part. And the technical analysis is the only place we could get that. And there's also, you know, headline trading. People follow narratives. You know, well, we have electric cars. That means lithium must be doing great, so I'm just going to buy lithium. Well, sometimes lithium is good and sometimes it's bad, even today. So the narrative doesn't lead you in the right direction either. You have to have that market data, and that's where technical analysis comes in.
Well, the fundamentals do eventually drive the market.
Correct.
It's just that you may have to be parked on the shoulder for a long time before your car gets refueled to go anywhere.
Like they say, yeah, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent. So that doesn't always lead you to the right place.
But John Templeton is known as a value investor.
Right.
I'm going to buy my stocks cheap. And he's one of the first mutual fund managers to have big investor meetings. I mean, people come into his meeting. It's kind of like a Warren Buffett meeting.
Right.
If you're a Buffett follower, you show up at the annual meetings, and people showed up at John Templeton's annual meetings. And there'd always be somebody who would stand up and say, you bought this stock, XYZ, 4 years ago, and it's below cost. And John Templeton's answer was always, sit down, you give me 10 years, and I'll be proven correct.
There you go.
Well, that's a value buyer. I mean, I don't want to overpay, but I also don't care if it goes up right away. And that's a conflict for somebody who is looking forward to retirement.
Correct.
You want it to go up, either to build the retirement portfolio or to increase it, offset the draws that you take to pay your bills. So value is important, but whether or not people are actually buying the stock is more important, because it may be cheap. Well, then there's the other issue, that the way the financial reporting rules work and tax laws, there's something called jiggering the financial statement.
Does that really happen in this country, Don? Do they really do that?
Well, Well, it does.
And yes, it does.
I was just thinking of a recent one that came across our charts the other day, which is DocuSign. Now, DocuSign's in the area of the business with digital documents.
Right.
That's the future. I mean, we're going away from paper signatures. You do this on your computer. Well, it turns out they really haven't been making any money and their sales haven't been that good, but earnings have been showing stellar numbers because of the jiggering that has been done. Except there's a point at which it catches up with you and the real data comes out. So just recently, this thing dropped 55% in a matter of, well, it kind of rolled over and then it collapsed.
Right.
Well, now we're dealing with the real fundamental data
to the real number, right.
Yeah, and so the price drops. Well, there were signs in advance that this just didn't make sense. There were better places to be than in watching this thing slowly drip away and then finally have a big flat tire. Actually, it requires an engine replacement, I think, right, to get this car off the road.
Correct.
Back on the road.
And the company will still tell you they're perfectly positioned. Everything's great. Everything is going well. But when you look at the data, it's like, I'm not sure that's quite true. And it's at least it's not true now. And that's what's important, because now is when we're investing. And we don't care if DocuSign is going to be in a great place in 5 years. That's half a decade from now. We need what's working today, and that's how you stay out of the weakness of the market and stay in the strength, and that's important.
So one of the things that's missing in modern portfolio theory is cash.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
that's a big
cash. That's right. If you are conservative, you need cash as an appropriate allocation bucket in your account. What comes to mind is a major advisory firm, national firm, does financial planning with high net worth people, and they use 5 buckets. None of them are cash.
Right.
They just say, over the long haul, you're going to be just fine. And then the client says, but I'm 75. The long haul looks like it's behind me, not ahead of me. What happens if this doesn't work in my time frame? And there is no answer for that except to change strategy, which is what we did as a result of the 08 and 09 collapse.
And it's super
important. That was a major.
Yep, it's super important to know that that's how it works, that they're not going to tell you what's going on now. And it's not part of the process. It's not part of what they're going to do. And cash, a lot of times, is the only answer. That's the only place you can be. And that's the key.
So one of the key questions for you, if you're working with a financial advisor other than us, is to ask your financial advisors. They say, oh, the market's going to collapse at some point in the future. We'll have another bear market. What is going to drive your decision to put me in cash? And shut up and wait for the answer, because there probably isn't one that you're going to like.
You won't like it. We are up against our last break of the morning here. If you are interested in our market updates, we have them every month. You can sign up for the next one at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Investors are ignoring inflation and the changing economy. I'm Perry Sykes, and along with Don Creech, we host Investor Resources every Saturday afternoon at 3. Investors ignore warnings that lack immediate consequences. It's like running red lights without an accident. Soon, you think you're good at running red lights, but eventually, your luck runs out. Unfortunately, by the time most investors figure it out, it's generally far too late to do anything meaningful about it. Get a free portfolio analysis. Email us at help@iriradio.com or call us at 800-317-9119. That's 800-317-9119. Register for our monthly stock market update at iriradio.com. Be prepared. Again, register for our monthly stock market update at iriradio.com.
if tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome to the final segment here of the Investor Resources Show. You are on with Perry Sykes and Don Creech, and we are kind of heading through where we've been and where we are today.
And if you want to talk to us during the week, we do have an office number, 800-317-9119. We'll be glad to speak with you. We have made a lot of references to modern portfolio theory and its use in the financial services industry. It's basically the foundation of every portfolio that is made, unless you find a firm that has managed to walk away from it. And that would be rare. That happens to be us. And we know there are some others, but we're not a common business model.
No, that MPT pie chart, that is the default. That's what you're going to get the vast majority of the time.
When we deal with the market, something that people don't like and the market doesn't like is uncertainty.
Oh, yeah.
But the only certainty with regard to investing in the market is that there is no certainty.
Ever. That's right.
Every decision has a consequence. It's a matter of weighing probabilities. And that's something that modern portfolio theory really doesn't do. It just says these averages will work. Just trust them. But despite uncertainty, we must decide and we must act. And that's what we do with our portfolios. We're constantly looking at, if we own this, will it work? Or if we already own it, should it still be in the portfolio? Is it still working? We need to judge decisions not only on results, but on how they're made. You are going to make, and we are too, you're going to make bad decisions from time to time. And when you do, you go back and say, how did I do that? What can I learn from it so that we don't repeat the same mistake?
And we do really try. We don't make a lot of bad decisions, really, but there are some bad outcomes. You can have the best decision-making process ever, and all the stars are aligned, and it looks like this is the best decision you could possibly make, and it turns out completely wrong because uncertainty is out there, and outcomes are never guaranteed, regardless of how many inputs you look at. And then it's a question of, what do you do about it? Do you just sit and wait, or do you do something about it? And we always, like you said, Don, we always make a decision and then act. And that's based on what's going on today, not on what's gone on over the past 100 years.
And that's the difference with modern portfolio theory, which right. says, well, we built this model and this model has long-term data in it. So we are going to just sit and wait it out.
Right.
And so it's not uncommon for a caller on a radio show to call in and say, well, you know, if this really is that bad, why does everybody use it?
Correct. We've gotten that question often. Yes.
So let me kind of address that. Back in 15, I'm the chief compliance officer. There's Pershing's putting on a compliance meeting in Seattle. So I sign up. I go over for the 2 days and listen to all the stuff, which is, you know, they're talking about compliance and how great they are if we would just move our client accounts to their firm. It was a recruiting meeting.
There we go.
It disguised as compliance.
always sell.
But you know who the Pershing guys were, because in Seattle, there weren't too many people in the business wearing suits and ties. And these guys all had on black suits.
That's the East Coast contingent. That's right.
So, and everybody's stationed at the table. I got a guy sitting next to me and he's chatting. What do you do? How do you manage money? And I'm telling him my story, part of which we've given you today, and explaining that we don't use modern portfolio theory anymore. And in my opinion, the primary reason it is still in use is that when a major client loses big amount of money, they sue the brokerage firm. And the brokerage firm is going to pull out his suitability questionnaire.
How old
are you? How much money do you have? How much are you taking out of your account? What is your long-term purpose? You go through 10 or 20 questions, and they assign a number to that unbeknownst to you. They add them up, and depending upon the total, they say, voila, based on our algorithms, your portfolio should be 60% stocks and 40% bonds or something close to that.
always close to that, yes.
But you still lost money. I mean, that was supposed to protect you on the downside, and it did not work. So you sue them. And when you get to court or mediation, arbitration, whatever it is, your attorney isn't schooled in finance theory. So he doesn't understand the flaws of modern portfolio theory. And of course the brokerage firm does, and they keep pulling us out and say, but you answered these questions this way and that, and we did. This is industry best practices. This is what you don't have a cause of action. And so my conclusion with this gentleman from Pershing was, the reason the industry uses it is because when they get sued, this is their legal defense. This is their platform, and the other side doesn't know how to unwind it. And I mean, he's polite and he's listening to me. And then 2 days we're walking out because the conference is over, and he happens to be walking beside me, and he looks at me and he goes, psst. And I said, yes. Now, he happens to have been and was the chief financial compliance officer for Pershing USA. And he's been listening to me spout all this stuff off for better part of 2 days. He goes, psst. And I said, yes. He says, I happen to agree with you, except he has to make all the brokers toe the line.
He's only going to whisper that to you. Yeah, he's not going to make that statement out loud. Yeah. But you should all think about that for a second. That when anyone hands you that pie chart, that's to protect the firm that's handing it to you, not you. And that's the important part that we want you to understand. That is not there for your protection. It's there for the protection of the firm. If you'll buy into that pie chart, they can safely lose every penny you give them, and they will not lose in court. And that's the idea.
Yeah, if things are bad enough, they're going to try and settle or something. But you basically, they're going to win because the plaintiff never understands the process and the theory. One of the other things that's really messed with the market have been buybacks. I mean, the theory is buybacks are good for everybody because it raises the stock price. Well, yes, it does.
It does, sure.
But it also hides the fact that sales revenue is not growing because they have fewer shares outstanding. So they could have the same amount of sales, but the sales per share is higher. Earnings per share is higher. And if they do enough, earnings per share can be higher while they're losing money. I mean,
it'll still be going up, right?
So why, you can ask the same question. Why does the industry use modern portfolio theory? You can say, why do companies do stock buybacks? Well, we can go back a couple of decades when the tax law was changed under Bill Clinton about how much salary was deductible. They said, nobody needs to make more than $1 million a year. You can pay more, but we're not going to let you deduct it. So corporations said, how do we get paid and not have to deal with this adverse tax deal? I said, stock options work. How do they benefit us? Well, we need higher stock prices. How do we get that? Well, we do stock buybacks. We use our cash to buy back stocks at ridiculous prices to make them go up even higher, so our compensation will be higher. That's the reason for stock buybacks, which have been driving the stock market since the 08-09 collapse.
They really have. And that brings out another, you know, essential truth of the markets. Follow the money. If you want to know why something's going on, follow the money. And that's going to lead you to the truth of why it is, you know, why are there stock buybacks? Why do so many people use that pie chart? Follow the money. And that will tell you exactly why they do it. And that's what we do in the market. We follow the money. Where's the cash flowing? Where's the momentum headed? And we want to buy those things that are gathering assets, and we want to sell the ones that are selling assets. And again, that leads you to the truth in the market. You know, where's the strong part of the market? Where's the money flowing? Follow the money. So we follow the money in and we follow the money out, and it does a pretty good job of keeping us in the right spot in the market.
And we call it leaders and laggards is another way to look at that.
There you go.
Normal rotation in the market. I refer to the ones that are winning as money magnets.
Correct.
They're causing investors to pay attention. For whether it's rational or irrational is irrelevant. The money's flowing in and they're buying more and more of this, and prices go up. When the buyers disappear, prices fall because the only people left in the market are the sellers. So falling markets are more often than not tied to a lack of buyers than it is that people have decided to run away. Though there's a point at which they capitulate and they do run away.
Right.
And it causes the market to move further down than it would normally be expected to correct, finding proper price discovery action.
Sure. And that's a really important part of what we do. We're not really too concerned about why markets are moving. We're concerned with that they're moving, and we want to be on the right side of those moves. So we just track that market data and try to follow the money in and follow the money out. And like I said, it works pretty well. It's simple. It's not always easy, but it is simple. It's a good process.
Well, one of our first instructors said to us, "This is not rocket science, but it'll take you about 5 years to get confident in doing what you're doing with it." Right. And he was right. It looks easy. Software's not hard, but the discipline and walking away from the emotional response is a challenge.
And he said it would take 5 years unless you're really smart. Then it'll take 10. Because you're gonna have to unlearn
That's
stuff.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're up at the end of the show. And you want to talk to us during the week, it's 800-317-9119. We have a week in review that we put out. Send us an email if you're not getting it. help@iriradio.com. Put review in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the email so we can set you up in constant contact. You want a free portfolio analysis to take a different look than the pie chart stuff that you normally get? Send us an email, help@iriradio.com. Tell us you want a free portfolio review, and give us your contact phone number, and we'll give you a call. We'll schedule some time online. For now, take care, and God bless you. God bless your family in the United States of America.